a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we are going to look ahead to this Colts game as we have several times throughout the show today. We will, in the 9 o'clock hour, get you ready, put our finishing touches on our coverage for the game. And obviously, you got In the Loop coming up next. You got the fellas with the drive. They'll be out at Taquerias Arandas in the Heights today from 2 to 6.
Your pronunciation is getting so good with that, Sean.
It's reps, man. It's just
by my gringo standards. Yeah. I don't care what any actual Spanish speakers say.
Yeah.
I'm impressed with the pronunciation.
I just want, if I'm getting approval from you, that's what I'm looking for, man. Screw Lopez.
Well, yeah, has Lopez critiqued your
he's given me positive feedback on it. Okay. Yeah.
Well, it's always, you know what you can always revert to is be like, well, I speak with more of a Puerto Rican accent or something. There's a, you know, people from like Baja, Mexico versus one of the Caribbean countries. Like there's somewhere where your pronunciation is dead on.
Okay. Yeah, Connecticut. That's where, yeah. I have the Connecticut Spanish dialect, yes.
I still try Mexican restaurants in every city I go to, and I don't know why. I'm perpetually disappointed.
Yeah.
And yet, maybe that's why, because I want to like reaffirm the preeminence of Tex-Mex, actual Tex-Mex.
We, as a rule, do not. We only go to Mexican restaurants in Texas. Amen. When we're on our road trips, once we hit the Texas border, any other state, nope, it ain't the same.
I think I've just got such a taste for it that I'm like, well, I'm going to try this place. Look at how nice their sign is. This looks authentic.
Yeah, maybe. I think I got...
Oh, I went to high school with this kid.
Yeah.
This kid doesn't know how to cook.
No. It's a standing rule. Texas only. Let's get to Bobby Slowick. There are a few issues that we've got with this Texans offense. Bobby Slowick, we got big problems with you. Not big problems. Hopefully Bobby addresses them. I thought he did a good job talking to the media yesterday. Let's start with the biggest thing, because this is... The concern is not only the offense not moving the football, but C.J. Stroud getting maimed in the process. Here is Bobby Slowick on the offense's protection issues.
For me, that starts with me. I'm not doing something right. I'm not coaching something right. I'm not saying things in a way that needs to be interpreted the way it needs to be interpreted. Because honestly, the things that we missed in the game are things that D'Amico's been giving us day one in training camp. So it's stuff that I know they've seen and they've done and they've knocked out before. I mean, obviously, you're on the road, you're in Lambeau, communication's going to be hard, you got to strain in that regard, but we've been working on that part of it for 4 weeks. Like, we've been working on what it's like on a road game, even when we have a home game. We've been straining on silent, we've been going on silent cadence even on weeks like this. So, I mean, that's been an emphasis for us. You see it in the pre-snap, now we got to see it in the post-snap, and I got to find a way to get that out of our game.
Confidence level, Seth, that they get this thing fixed for Sunday.
My confidence level is at a 6.5 out of 10.
Okay.
I think there were some glaringly bad mental errors in that game that those guys are going to feel genuinely bad about. Mm-hmm. I think that as much as we've kind of bashed the offensive line for far too long this week, and yet I feel compelled to do it every time I turn my microphone on. But it's that there's some stuff that just needs to be cleaned up. And I was glad the way Bobby Slowick presented it was exactly the way I feel it should be. He wasn't just saying, it's on me, like almost passive aggressively the way coaches do, and then not provide any detail. The fact of the matter is, none of those guys up there are idiots, the offensive linemen. They're all like reasonably intelligent by offensive linemen standards in the NFL, but they're making dumb errors. And sometimes when that happens, I usually go back to, all right, that's ultimately a coaching issue, because you've got reasonably intelligent guys making stupid errors. Then they either don't understand what they're supposed to be doing in the moment, or their instructions aren't clear enough, or they've got too much else going on and trying to adjust. So it comes down to, how are you teaching it? Why are the problems being made? And how do we prepare better for this next week? I think Bobby Slowick understands that ultimately that's on him, that's on Chris Strausser, that's on the running backs and wide receiver coaches, because it's not just the offensive line, it's the tight ends and the running backs as well. I think it's probably been a lot of, just as it was with the pre-snap stuff, it's a lot of back to basics. I think in some of sorting out the blitz and everything, last week was a really good example where with a loss, they can't skate by it. You know, you can't whistle past the graveyard the way you have versus the Patriots or whomever else. You can even make excuses against the Vikings because they're so freakishly good at the deception part of it. The Packers are good at it, but not like the Vikings. You guys just were bad against the Packers. So, yeah, I think it gets cleaned up, and it's a good week to do it because the Colts are not nearly the defense that either the Vikings or the Packers were.
I wonder what – because you're right. We have hammered the offensive line this week. I don't feel bad about it at all. I think they deserve it based on that game and based on the sort of the splotchiness of this season for them and the inconsistency of this season. It's a team with Super Bowl aspirations. This is not a Super Bowl level offensive line. So the criticism I think is deserved. I do wonder if Brandon McManus duck hooks that kick at the end of the game and they're 6-1, would we have been hammering it? Because it's just as big a problem, right? Like that field goal has nothing to do. That field goal attempt has nothing to do with how poorly or well the offensive line played, you know?
Right. No. If the Texans had won that game, we would be having the same conversation we've had after multiple Texans victories, which is, all right, you know, do not ignore in victory what you would address in defeat.
Yeah.
Because there's some things offensively that need to be cleaned up. The one thing that also that I keep reminding myself is that the Texans are 14th in scoring offense right now. The Chiefs are 13th. You know, like it's not an indication that these guys on the quarterback's not as good as we thought he was, this, that, or the other. There's just there are some talent deficiencies, especially with I would say with Nico Collins out, but you still have a pretty good, damn good top two wide receivers.
Yes,
they've just got to clean some stuff up. Yeah. And a listener early this week asked, "Hey Seth, you know, do you know?" Like, how reasonable is it to expect that a position group improves over the course of a season? I can tell you from personal experience, and the reason I talk about back to basics is that I've been on defenses before where the run defense was really struggling. And the thing that turns it around is adding more of the back to basics walkthroughs of this is exactly how you fit versus this look.
Mm-hmm.
We're taking it back. You can't fret about how you're not running this elegant offense that you thought you were going to run.
Yeah.
You've got to genuinely get back to basics, the fundamental stuff, because sometimes there's just fundamental things that guys aren't getting right that you can only clean up if you really talk about it and walk through it and everything. And I think that's where the Texans are as an offense right now. You really got to get back to the bread and butter, like baseline stuff that you thought you had covered during training camp, but it needs to be reaffirmed.
I think the scary thing in the short term here about these issues, there's two scary things about these issues here. One is more big picture, one is more short term. The short term one is, if they come out and they look the way they did against Green Bay, they still look confused and muddled offensively, and they're not moving the ball. CJ's getting hit. If you're still not fixed here, you got no time to fix it before the next game, because the next game is on the road on Thursday. You're lucky to get two light practices in this coming week, let alone still continue to try to get your offense moving in the right direction. I think the other thing, and for anybody who's like, boy, you guys keep hitting on this all week long, we're not getting much of that lately, but we've gotten some of it this week. Ask yourself, like, what's the one thing that can really torpedo this season, right? Mm-hmm. And think about the mistakes the Texans have made through this 5-2 start that have probably kept games a little closer than they should be. You know, giving up big chunk plays on defense. Well, that doesn't torpedo your season. That happens. You still won those games. Mistakes on special teams. Yeah, that's bad, but that doesn't torpedo your season. Pre-snap penalties. Doesn't torpedo your season. CJ Stroud getting hurt. That torpedoes your season. That kills your season. And this, so this is a different, category of mistake that they're making here. These are mistakes it's costing you games. Like, it could cost you your quarterback if you keep letting teams have free runs at him like this.
Right. And it's old school QB hits. It's the quarterback standing there and then just getting hit by a free rusher.
Yeah.
Like, the stuff that you don't even see that much anymore, because quarterbacks don't get hit that much. CJ's taking some of those hits.
And they're all legal, too. I mean,
all been legal.
Yeah.
They got a clear shot.
Nothing's
dirty.
They've
got plenty of time to get, like, to hit the midsection and nothing else and all of that. Yeah, it's all this ugly stuff. It's like Quinnen Williams hit last year in the Jets game.
Yep.
It was a clean hit. I know there are a lot of Texans fans that were angry about that. That was as clean as could be, and it was all on Juice Scruggs, the left guard, on that play. Yep. That had nothing to do with Quinnen Williams being a dirty player. That was a clean and legal hit. And you just, like, obviously, as it was in the Jets game last year, you can't expose him to too many of those.
Nope.
Texans. And it did. And by the end of the game, too, it was affecting CJ's decision.
Yes, 100%.
He was definitely – he threw that ball to Tank Dell. He could have waited a little bit longer to see – like, John Metchie would have been, like, his last option on that play, but he was coming open if CJ could have pump-faked the safety on that play.
Yeah.
But I don't – CJ didn't have the confidence in his offensive line at that point to do it.
No, and not only made a conservative decision, but a poor decision game management-wise. It stopped clock, you know? And so that's noticeable. The Texans have been a pretty good first-half team offensively. They've been a wretched second-half team offensively. Slowick was asked about the halftime adjustments.
We've also emphasized coming out of half. And probably the game we emphasized it the most was New England, and that showed up, right? And we executed well. Defense helped us, gave us a short field. In this last game, we didn't. You know, we came out, and I think the first play, again, they blew us off the ball on a run play, and that's not – like, we adjust scheme pretty consistently as we go through a game. I'd say every game, you know, we react to what they're doing. They react to what we're doing, but it's never – things we haven't seen before, you know. So by and large, we're staying within the game plan. It's more we gotta find a way, and we're working on finding a way to make sure our mentality is right when we come out of the half that we're ready to go.
That I thought was interesting too, and just I, you know, if that was the only question he answered all press conference long, I would have felt like, boy, he's really putting that on the players there. But he had, like, personally, he had pointed to himself, like, multiple times already by the time he gave that answer. And, like, talked about how they need to tweak and adjust things and that there's things they need to clean up. That sounded simply like these guys are coming out of the locker room and I don't know what they're doing. Did they have too many Uncrustables at halftime? Are they feeling a little bit logy? I don't know. Do we have type 2 diabetes going on here or something? Because these guys are coming out lethargic at the half. I accept that answer at face value, which is, yeah, the offensive line's getting blown off the ball. Like, what the hell are you guys talking about? Are you playing Halo during halftime? Just come out there with a bloodlust.
Yeah.
Can I have a little bit of bloodlust in my life?
I don't know that
please.
You can. I don't know that you can with this offensive line. I just don't know. I don't feel like piling on them again on Friday, but I think the answer right now is I don't think so.
Bloodlust.
Yeah, bloodlust.
You know what John Madden used to do with his offensive linemen? Because, sometimes they're wired not to have a bloodlust in them. He would put him in a room with a blocking dummy and tell them he wanted it torn apart, and just like let him just get in touch with their more
primal side,
caveman tendencies.
Visceral,
yeah. Sometimes they need to be. Sometimes the big fatties need to be exposed to that world. That, you know, they've had it drilled into their heads to be gentle giants by society for so long that they've lost touch with their psychopathic side, and they need to get in touch with that.
It sounds like you might have seen the same tweet I did yesterday about the Uncrustable consumption in the NFL. Did you see that?
Yeah, that it was like an absurd number of Uncrustables that NFL teams go through.
80,000. Yeah.
80,000 a week
during a season. The most I think they had the team. I think it was Denver eats the most. The team that ate the most Uncrustables during a given week.
Yeah,
I forget what team it was, but the number was like 715 Uncrustables.
I remember when I went to that. I remember Uncrustables had like a huge, a lot of ad presence at that at the Blue Jays game that Brandy and I went to
a few
years ago.
Okay,
I was like, is Uncrustables bigger in Canada? Is this because I can't remember the last time I even saw an Uncrustable.
Do you like them?
I don't know if I've ever had one.
Really?
Which makes me feel like I need to seek one out. Maybe that can be my new. That'll be my TikTok niche. Uncrustables reviews.
Yeah.
How many flavors are there of Uncrustables?
I don't know. I've never eaten them. I don't like peanut butter and jelly. It's weird. I like peanut butter. I like white bread. I like jelly. I never liked peanut butter and jelly. Ever since I was a kid, I've never liked peanut butter and jelly. I don't know why.
I never liked my friend's house peanut butter. You know, it's like in your household, you've got your peanut butter and your jelly and your bread.
Yes.
I would go to friends' houses and like a mom would make me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And I'm like, you stupid whore. Okay. What are you trying to shovel into my face? That's what I would say.
At age
That's
six.
The way I would ensure never having to eat that peanut butter and jelly sandwich
or get
again.
Invited over ever again. Yeah.
No wonder your husband's cheating on you. That's what I would say.
6 year old.
Whether he
Seth.
Was or not. Yeah.
You know what the biggest food?
No wonder I always come over here because your husband's got a great stash of nudie mag.
That was a thing, kids, back in the day. Yeah. Usually underneath the master bedroom on the husband's side. The biggest variance of any sort of like sleepover food, like you going over to a friend's house food or you sleep over at a friend's house, scrambled eggs. My mom made scrambled eggs a certain way and it was amazing. And the house that I slept over at most often, my buddy Paul that lived across the street, his mom made scrambled eggs and somehow they were some weird shade of like off gray. They were like a weird color almost. And I'm like, do I have to eat these? Like these don't even look like eggs.
What was her name?
It was Mrs. Earhart.
I'm gonna seek her out on Facebook.
She's still alive. Yeah, you can let her know.
Still
her scrambled
making her
eggs
crappy
sucked.
Eggs. Yeah. 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 I'm gonna insult her eggs on Facebook out of nowhere.
She's old. She might not have all her marbles, but she is on Facebook.
I'm gonna cite you.
You know what? Let's do this. I've held this secret far too long.
Man, Farragher had the best snack closet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Jeff Farragher's snack closet was the best. It was like a Shangri-La of Farragher's parents were the best. They were the ones that like they were when I was in high school. They wanted us. We could drink at their house as long as we weren't going anywhere.
Yeah.
They'd rather have us drinking in their basement than out somewhere else driving around.
That's
and
good stuff.
They were like, yeah. The snack closet was pristine.
Oh my
it was
God.
Incredible.
It's like it's like the kid version of the Golden Nugget. Where are you going? Going to vacation at Farragher's house.
I'm gonna go get whiskey and corn pops.
Yeah.
Damn it. Because my mom won't keep sweet cereals or whiskey in the house.
Vodka and Rice Krispie treats. Yes.
Yeah, but what happened to Farragher? Oh, he's chief of staff at a hospital.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so,
The
kid must have
turned out just fine.
Must be a total bum. Trade deadline stuff. Texan fans, are you up for this trade of one of your wide receivers? We have that for you coming up next. But Seth has an injury report.
Oh, the injury report. Bad news yesterday. Henry Toa after practicing Wednesday and working his way through the concussion protocol, was out on Thursday. Makes it very unlikely that he plays on Sunday, but we'll see. Al Shaer and Jimmy Ward were both out. Back at practice, but limited, Robert Woods and Steven Sims. And with the Colts, the big names you need to either worry about or be intrigued by is that Buckner, the defensive tackle, and Jonathan Taylor, the running back, were both full go. That's your injury report brought to you by Mokarem Injury Lawyers.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. We were talking a couple segments ago about rules of places where you would and would not try Mexican food. Amy and I have a Texas-only rule when it comes to Mexican food. Text message. Tried Mexican food in the Netherlands. Big mistake.
Oh, way more mayonnaise, I'm guessing, than your classic Mexican
yes.
food. Yeah.
Would you like more mayonnaise on your tacos, sir? No, in the Netherlands, certainly overseas.
I would have stood up and yelled at them for appropriating Tex-Mex culture.
In Spanish.
You sons of bitches. Yeah. Excuse my language, kids. Don't use that language with any of the Dutch people, you know.
No, please don't. Trade deadlines. So trade deadlines.
Do all the hash you want, but don't use that language around the Dutch.
Oh, they're cool with that in the Netherlands for sure. Trade deadline stuff. We'll hit the Colts. We'll hit them hard in the final segment coming up here and get you ready for Sunday's game. Noon kick here on Sports Radio 610, 9 a.m. Texans countdown. That would be the two fellers you're listening to right now, me and Seth. Trade deadline will become a big topic here next week, especially if the Texans lose this game on Sunday. Because if they win this game, there will be, I'm sure, because there have been in every game this year, certain things that are going to concern us. They've, other than the Patriots game, they haven't had a win yet that has anybody feeling amazing coming out of it. I think we feel really good about this team overall, just based on the record, talent level. You're going to get Nico Collins back, and so forth. There's a lot of fun games the rest of the year, too. It's a fun schedule. But especially if they lose this Sunday, Seth, the trade deadline will be 8 days away at that point. Mm-hmm. And I think for the Texans, my guess is that the looks will be on the, ironically, because it's been the better side of the football so far this year, the defense.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I feel like that's probably more the places where trades might address things.
I think the trades, look, an offensive guard, I think, is a very real possibility. And I think there's enough people out in the league that run similar systems, similar terminology, et cetera, that you could find a guy who is plug and play. But I think that defensively, the one thing that I still really have questions about is, okay, versus the high-powered offenses in the playoffs, can you play in man when you need to play man? And I just, even with Kamari Lassiter coming back, I'm not 100% confident about that they're as broadly deep as they need to be in the defensive backfield. So a cornerback from one of these laggard teams would be a welcome addition.
Yeah, I think so too. And we're starting to see which teams might be open for business from that standpoint. God, this might be the first time, like, if my team traded for a guard, I'd be like, damn, I'm
hell
pumped
yeah.
about this. Hell yeah.
Joe Bitonio, Bitonio doesn't have to go the Joe Thomas route of spending his entire career on the Browns and just languishing in non-relevance.
Yeah, come
on here.
Here's the problem for trading for Joe Bitonio.
Is he injured?
No, I'm looking at his spot rack page.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of money, like with a lot of their guys, to accommodate Deshaun's contract. He's one of the guys they restructured. So he's got all this dead money crammed into these voidable years. I'm fearful of what you'd have to give up for the Browns to take that big a cap hit for a guy who's one of their foundational guys. Like Joel Bitonio is as Brown as there is a Brown right now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But a guy like that, though, you know, just an upgrade at guard. That's about as plug and play as you could get on the offensive line right now, probably, Seth, right? Is like, hey, I mean, I'd rather have a brand new guy playing left guard who has to get acclimated than Kenyon Green continuing to do what he's doing.
Right. And I think the fear with Bitonio, too, is that, okay, he's getting up there in years. He's still, like, he's in his 10th or 11th year. So, and he hasn't been as good this year as he typically is. But I always think of Andrew Whitworth when it comes to something like that. Like, okay, how much of is he just a victim of everything else that's happening offensively right now? And if in a new system, in a new environment, and with some real genuine hope, you know, they got, how many years did the Rams get out of Whitworth after they signed him basically as a, he'll stick around for one more year before he retires?
Enough to get a Super Bowl out of him. Yeah. I know that. You know, he was a big fixture on that left side for the team that won it all in 2021, if I'm not mistaken. So, I think Whitworth played till he was damn near 40, didn't he?
He played 5 years with the Rams. Yeah,
yeah.
He
ended
up playing 5 years with the Rams.
He's 42.
40 years old his last year.
He's 42 right now. He came into the league in 2001. So Whitworth, that's an interesting comp. Bitonio's 33 years old right now. So that would be one. It's been interesting seeing some of the speculation about the wide receiver position. By far, the most fluid and relevant position throughout the offseason in terms of transactions and contracts and things like that, trades, disgust with their employer, things like that. John Mechie to Washington for a 6th-round pick is a trade that is being suggested in a piece, I believe, on theathletic.com. Mm-hmm. They've got 8 wide receiver trades that should happen, you know, that 8 wide receiver trades that this particular group of folks would do if they were GMs. And one of them is moving John Mechie to Washington for a 6th-round pick.
That's not rich enough for me. I still look at John Mechie as a guy with upside. In some ways, I almost look at him as a quasi-rookie because he hasn't physically been this version of himself until now.
Yeah.
Between his knee injury that he was recovering from and then having, cancer, he just wasn't the same. So we saw that. Physically, he looks like a different guy this year, but he's still not as dependable as Xavier Hutchinson, but there's upside there. I think if I had to choose between Robert Woods and John Mechie right now, I'd feel better about trading away Robert Woods to a team. Now you'd be trading him away to a contender probably who wants some vet. No team that's like obviously they're going to be buyers at the trade deadline, but I think they want to look at Robert Woods as – a cherry on top in terms of, okay, reliability amongst our defense or amongst our receiving corps in the NFC. Yeah. I don't want him to go to an AFC team, obviously.
Mike Williams back to the Chargers is one of the deals in this thing. Cooper Kupp to Pittsburgh. I'm with you. You and
I don't think Cooper Kupp's going anywhere.
Well, I think the Rams winning last night. I like the trade deadline's less than 2 weeks away. So teams deciding whether or not we are buyers or sellers has to happen imminently. I think the Rams beating the Vikings and getting Puka Nacua back as well to pair with Kupp probably has them looking at their season a little bit differently now than had they lost to the Vikings last night.
It's like the Astros in their June surge. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, we got a whatever mentality, even though the Astros weren't publicly saying that they would ever be sellers at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
There was an opportunity. There was a window there where, they totally should have been until all of a sudden they had that surge. So, right now the Rams winning that game and the double whammy is seeing what it looked like with both Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua on the field together. They've got very, I would say, right this moment, there's no way in hell they're thinking about being sellers of the
trade. And they got Seattle next week. Like the Rams go to Seattle and win. I don't have the standings in front of me, but Seattle's 4-3 right now, and I know they're leading the NFC West. Like the Rams could be in first place 10 days from now in that division. That division is very winnable. Because I don't think anybody anticipated San Francisco being sub .500 at this point in the season. So I don't think Kupp's going anywhere. I'm glad for that.
That division is just jam packed. 4-3 Seahawks at the top with the 3-4 49ers at the bottom.
Isn't it crazy? Like there was a I feel like there was a time within the last 2 years where we were like, this is the best division in football with these four teams, and I feel like. I feel like we've said that about the NFC or the AFC North coming into this season. All four of these teams could make the worst team in this division is the Pittsburgh Steelers, who never finish below .500. Oh, either that or the Ravens and the Steelers are the only two good teams in that division.
Dude, okay, the NFC West, if you want to make it even more so, all right, the Seahawks are at the top. They have a scoring margin of +16 right now.
Okay.
They've scored okay, they're 4-3. They're winning the division. At the bottom of the division is the 49ers, who have a scoring margin of +22 right
plus
now.
+22.
The Cardinals and the Rams are both negative. So it's just that they're 500 football teams right there.
The Cardinals are above the Niners in the standings, huh?
Yeah, the Cardinals are. Everybody's 3-4. The Cardinals, then the Rams, then the 49ers.
Okay, and then the Seahawks.
They've all got a 429. I don't know what the division. It's got to be either division or conference record or whatever.
Yeah. So they're all 3-4, and the Seahawks are 4-3 right now.
Yeah,
I mean, and that division was.
And the worst team in the division by standings has the best scoring margin.
Has the best scoring margin and the second best odds to get out of the NFC and get to the Super Bowl right now.
Right.
They're last place in their division by tiebreaker. They're last place in their division. At the very least, they're tied for last record-wise, and they are still the number two team in the NFC on the odds board behind
Detroit.
It's
a really weird year because even the Chiefs are the favorite to win the Super Bowl. They're undefeated, and yet, like offensively, they're a middle-of-the-pack offense.
And I think, and that's why, just to bring this back to the Texans before we hit the final segment and go deep on the Colts and the Texans, I think that's why, for me at least, why I have been probably more critical of a 5-2 team after wins than we would normally be. Than I was, say, back in 2012 when they started off 5-1 last time. I don't remember looking at every single nook and cranny like this. For me, a lot of it is, man, this thing is so winnable this year. It's a much more now. I need Derrick Henry to slow down a little bit. That would make me feel a little bit better about things. I think overall, this is as even and balanced a year as we've seen in the NFL in a long, long time.
I think the biggest thing that I was upset about with the Ravens' victory on Monday was that, okay, the Ravens were down 10, and they ran as soon as they were down 10, I think they ran the ball like 5 of the next 6 snaps.
Yeah.
So they didn't go away from the old narrative, which was based in facts, which was, okay, the Ravens are this awesome running team, but can they come from behind, or do they abandon the run too early? They did none of that. They regained the lead and then turned it into an absolute bludgeoning.
Steamrolled them.
And it's not just Derrick Henry, it's Justice Hill, the other running back, who's been lethal as a receiver. Right. And then you pair that up with Derrick Henry, who's been lethal as a runner. And then, oh, yeah, by the way, you got Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, it's wild.
And the defense looks like the Ravens' defense has been hot and cold. That's they're not the same defense they were last
they're
year.
They're not. They're still pretty good, though. They still got
It's a, it's a very, very good football
I don't feel great about moving the ball against them as a Texans fan right now. And they'll get a chance to do that on Christmas Day. But for now, we got the Colts. So let's take a look. Keys to the game and prediction from me. I gave mine earlier, but Seth gives his in the final segment of the show, and he's been very accurate of late. You'll want to stay tuned for that. That's coming up next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
Right, Colts Texans coming up on Sunday, 9 a.m. Texans countdown, noon kick, and then post-game show up to Sunday Night Football at 6:30. Seth and I got you for the pregame. Clinton, I got you for the postgame. And the Texans got you in between at NRG Stadium and listening here on Sports Radio 610. I looked, for those who plan on watching it on TV, this game is not getting the same treatment as the Packers game last week. This
There's only so much that Pat McAfee and J.J. Watt can do to elevate the AFC South in the minds of the populace.
Yeah.
And the Colts versus Texans just doesn't have the same juice outside of our two cities.
It doesn't. This is an Andrew Catalan Tiki Barber joint on Sunday. So that's and they're both fine, but they don't. Their voices don't scream big game. So that's
right.
You know, their voices more scream 2021 and 2022. And yet, I would submit, you know, having skimmed the schedule to put the card together for earlier in the show of games to watch around the NFL this weekend, this is definitely one of the more meaningful games on the schedule this weekend. This is a the Colts win this game, and all of a sudden you're in a dogfight in the AFC South.
You're
5-3 with the Colts being 5-3. Mm-hmm. And you've got a really hard schedule coming up the second half of the season.
Yeah.
The Texans.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, 100%.
It's a big game.
With a Thursday night game coming up right around the corner.
Yeah.
That's you're thrust into a dogfight that you could have kept yourself out of.
Yep.
So a lot of it, honestly, for the when it comes to the Colts themselves, the fact that they're 4-3 right now, you could argue that they could have easily lost a few of those games, but they've played like a 5-1 football team in a lot of respects.
Yes.
Including a defense that's just slowly gaining steam and notoriety and respectability. That's been a big part of it. But they're underperforming in some ways, whereas the Colts maybe have overperformed, plus they faced the Dolphins and all of those other things. If the Texans aren't able to fix some of these issues in this second go-round versus the Colts that they've had all season long, then I'm gonna really start to worry. Right now, I'm right there on the brink of like, okay, they've got time to fix this stuff. They can clean this up. Nico Collins is coming back. Then I still feel very optimistic about the rest of the season. If they drop this one to the Colts, I'm going to be very upset. Very upset, Sean.
I will too. I'm confident that they won't. I will be upset if we come in on Monday, and especially if the causes of loss are the same things that we've been seeing and harping about for the last few days. The Colts are 4-3. The four quarterbacks that they've beaten in their wins, and by the way, all of their wins are by one score or less. So they've not blown anybody out. Chicago in Caleb Williams' third game of his career, the week after he got sacked by the Texans 7 times, he lost to the Indianapolis Colts. They beat Justin Fields. They lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars. We should point that out.
Yeah.
They beat Tennessee 20-17 with Will Levis at quarterback. They beat the Miami Dolphins 16-10 with Snoop Huntley at quarterback. Like, this is, again, I like when you make the analogy sometimes, like if this were the college football playoff and a committee were assessing this team and how they looked in accruing their record. The fact of the matter is, this is not a very good 4-3 football team right now.
Yeah.
You know, like they haven't been impressive.
And the flip side of it, though, too, is that, okay, the Texans have beat really, they've beat Josh Allen without a full complement of wide receivers, too.
Yeah.
So that's the one notable quarterback that they've beaten, unless I'm missing out on somebody. I mean, Anthony Richardson's barely an NFL quarterback.
Yep.
Caleb Williams was in his second game.
Yep.
There's still question marks there about going up against the cream of the crop in the NFL, which they'll have an opportunity to do. Not this week, though.
No.
They face Anthony Richardson this week.
No.
Who's one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yeah, so you can't allow with Anthony Richardson. You can't allow this time what happened with him last time. He made a few plays on the ground. I think you laid it out earlier, I think, pretty well. Like, if he goes, I think he was like 6 carries for 56 yards in the first game, something like that. So he had a couple long busts there that, you know, the Texans just, you know, they were covering their man. They were in whatever coverage and there was open space. Anthony Richardson took it. You can survive a couple of those. You cannot give up multiple plays of 54 yards or more in this game and expect to win. You can win,
right,
but I don't think you can expect to win like you did. And giving up a block punt deep in your own territory. Like, you just can't. You can't do things in this game against this opponent that allow them to erase 5 or 6 really bad plays as if they never happened. You know what I mean? Like, you just can't do that in this game.
Yeah. So, and I think I feel very confident this week that it's going to be a good game for the Texans. One of the reasons is that in the first go-round, they were still playing Kalen Bullock and Kamari Lassiter, who were just rank rookies at that point. And the Kalen Bullock wasn't playing as much. Mm-hmm. But Kamari Lassiter made some rookie-type mistakes. I think Jimmy Ward made some mistakes that were more about age than anything else, like physically not able to maybe do the same things that Kalen Bullock is able to do. And I think that ends up being an advantage for the Texans, the experience of Kamari Lassiter and Kalen Bullock.
Yeah.
I think the defensive line has actually stepped it up since then, both against the run and as pass rushers. I feel better in almost every matchup across the board after what was a physical. The Colts game was way closer than it should have been. On a down-by-down basis, the Texans were beating up on the Colts on both sides of
no
the
doubt.
Ball. And I really think, given that D'Amico has a history of coming back from losses and having good performances, C.J. Stroud has a history of coming back from disappointing games and having great games. And I think the offensive line, obviously, the tight ends, the running backs, and pass protection, all of that is what we're most concerned about. I think they, just as they fixed the pre-snap penalties a couple weeks ago, I think they clean up some of the mental stuff this week. And they're playing at home where it's less of an issue.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because the Texans themselves have brought up the fact that they were on the road, you know, that they've had most of their problems, or the games where they've had the most problems have been on the road. This is a total look in the mirror game for the offensive line. Like, if the offensive line does not come out and play pretty well this weekend, I'm not expecting them to be perfect, because I don't know that they have that in them, but I do expect them to be significantly better than they were last week. And in some respects, they can't be worse than they were last week. But I expect them to be significantly better. Yes, I agree. Being at NRG Stadium will be a big factor in that. If they come out, though, and they're playing poorly again, then I don't know what to do at that point. I was discouraged after the Green Bay game, but there's some explanations for that you know, that I can accept. They have to come out and play well this week. If we're talking about the offensive line on Monday in a loss, especially, that's a big issue, man. Like, that is somebody's career has sand running out of the hourglass situation. Like, that's a 5-alarm fire if the offensive line is bad in a game you need this badly at home.
Yeah.
Coming off of that performance last week.
The biggest concern I have really about that matchup is the interior defensive line for the Colts. They get Buckner back. So you got Grover Stewart and Buckner, who the Texans did well against in week one.
Yeah, yep.
So Buckner's not, you know, like, how healthy is he? Is he 100%? Whatever he might be. They have had success versus this interior defensive line before. But it remains a big challenge, because those guys, like every single offensive lineman there, none of them are playing impressively right now.
No.
And they're going up against a couple of one of the better defensive tackle duos in the league.
How concerned are you about no Nico Collins in this game, given how much success he's had against the Colts the last three times?
I'm not as concerned about it, because Joe Mixon has also had recent success against the Colts with the Houston Texans.
Yeah.
And I don't think that changes this week. I think this is going to be a really good week for Joe Mixon. I think that ends up being at least one of the explosive plays that the Texans have. And so it's really the mistakes by Anthony Richardson or just his general inability to throw accurately is probably going to be the big story in this game.
Yeah.
I think the Texans defense forces Anthony Richardson into being the worst version of himself.
Okay, so give it to us then, Karnak.
It's Texans 28-13.
28-13, okay.
Yeah, this will be a decisive victory. They'll still hit the under, and I've been very successful taking the under in these Texans games.
Yep.
But it's going to be not because of any kind of just malfeasance by the Texans offensive line. It's going to be more that they just shut down the Colts offense.
Okay, so you've been pretty good not just being accurate with the scores and where they are in the totals over under, but kind of on the game flow and how the game looks.
Yeah.
Do you think, is this a 28-13 where we're still sweating it early in the fourth, or is this a 28-13 where it's, you know, it's 28-7 going into the fourth, that kind of thing?
It's 28-13. Well, okay. You don't need a late scoring surge from the Texans.
That's my question.
I think that it'll get uncomfortable potentially because I think that the Texans will have the lead in the second half, and Anthony Richardson's going to extend some drives with his legs, and they're gonna seep some yardage out on the ground via Jonathan Taylor. It's a matter of limiting the big plays, so that's where it's going to get uncomfortable.
Okay.
Is that people are going to be asking me why the hell the teams play prevent defense when they have a lead, and it's not prevent defense, but it is. They're playing a little bit softer.
All right. Texans a 5-point favorite. Total is 46.5. So Seth and I both have Texans cover. Game goes under. I got 27-17 Texans as we bring in John Lopez and Reggie Atatula. This is a room full of optimism right now, guys.
It is a room full of optimism.
But the beginning of the week, it was a lot about the offensive line and being discouraged and kind of like Lou Holtz used to do back in the day. He'd have you feeling like you were the worst team in the world at the beginning of the week, as my brother used to tell me. And by the end of the week, he had you feeling like you could beat the Dallas Cowboys, which mattered back in the 90s.
Yeah, I was like,
like today wouldn't
back in the in 93 when my brother was on that team, that mattered, beating the Cowboys. But now we've at least worked ourselves up into enough of a lather where we feel like the Texans can substantially beat the Indianapolis Colts this weekend.
I think the Texans will beat the Colts.
Yeah.
I'm just curious on how it plays out.
Are we in here on Monday still complaining about things?
That's what I'm curious
about.
Yeah. That's what I'm curious about.
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
Or even after.
I mean, we are radio hosts. Yeah. After all.
No.
Is it the kind of victory where even we in Houston wouldn't be complaining about it after a victory like we have after almost every victory for the Texans this year?
Yeah.
Which led, usually we're just echoing the exact same thing the players are saying.
Yeah.
That usually after these victories, the players and the coaches are saying the same thing we're saying.
Yep.
But we get labeled as being too negative about it. Yeah.
Yeah, we're not allowed to.
But honestly, isn't that a great thing? Like, I was scrolling on Instagram, as you probably shouldn't do, but I do anyways.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, when you have a losing or you have like a bad team and you lose a game, they're like, oh man, we were close. We almost got them.
Yeah.
And you have a good team and you lose a game. You're like, how the hell did. And I feel like that's indicative of the fact that the Texans are indeed like a very good team now, to the point where now we feel, even in wins, if it does not look to the level of quality that we can complain.
We just discussed this actually in the last hour. I think it's two reasons. One, the reason we were so negative this week about the offensive line is they are allowing the one thing that can kill your season, which is C.J. Stroud getting hurt.
Yes.
Offsides, yes. False starts, letting 60-yard chunk plays happen on defense, that can't kill your season. C.J. gets hurt, that kills your season. The second thing is, this is a really winnable league. That's why I'm so hypercritical. Like it is so even right now. Like, if you just correct these two little things, you're one of the two or three best teams in football.
Yeah.
So it's a good spot to be in. I'd rather be the latter, Reggie. I'd rather be the pessimistic fan of a 5-2 team than the optimistic fan of a David Culley coach team.
Yeah, exactly. They were competitive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've been both.
Yeah. Did you disparage my good name today?
No. I just, I forget why. Were we talking about my rolling of the R's at some point on the show today?
Oh, yeah. Whether Lopez approved of your pronunciation.
Yeah.
Oh, I approve. I just think it's funny.
He approved. Yeah, no, I admitted that you approved. After I screamed, screw Lopez, and Seth's like, Lopez doesn't approve it. I'm like, no, he actually does. He's critiquing me and helping me refine it a little bit. I will say this. I'm better than voice guy at rolling my R's.
You are.
And saying Takarias Arandas.
Atta, baby.
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
And
right
the original Carajillo with the Liqueur 43.
Now say Chile Relleno.
All right, what are you doing?
Why would you do that?
Because you're ordering food at Takarias Arandas, and you may want a Chile Relleno.
That's why I order tacos.
Queso.
Exactly. So sometimes when you don't want to get too good at pronunciation of Spanish words without knowing Spanish, because then the Spanish speaker will just start in on reeling off something. And you gotta,
Sorry,
you're all impressed with yourself for saying taquerias.
Yeah, I'm like, sorry, sir, I only speak food. All right, speaking of which, the fellas will be out there at 2 o'clock today at the Taquerias Arandas in the Heights.
Damn right,
on Shepherd, 900 block of Shepherd. So go see them out there today at 2 o'clock. I'm going to pop over there, I think, a little later on today. Seth, I'll see you at 9 a.m. Outside NRG Stadium, Texans Countdown on Sunday. Antibodies to you.
Antibodies and only Tex-Mex and Texaco only, or die. That's what I say.
There you go. That sends you into the weekend on a good note. All right. We are done. We are out of time. You're listening to KLT and KLT HD2, an Odyssey station.